So today we were going to use this time to get a little bit deeper into the model and hear from our resident experts, Jen and Domenico, on the target model. And if you guys may have seen, I sent an email this morning or yesterday. Did I send it today? With the Freedom brochure. Did everybody get that?
Yeah.
I sent it yesterday. Okay. So you may want to refer to that throughout. And then I also promised Melinda that there were some questions that I would make sure that we asked today to get these answered for us as we move forward with our implementation plan. So Steph, how did we want to start? Do we just want to go through
the brochure, or
hear from Jen?
Yeah, Janet, maybe if you want to start us off, and then I have the list of questions too, Rachel, maybe if we want to do this in a more conversational way, if there are questions that apply, Jen, as you're doing your overview, maybe we'll jump in and ask them, and then the ones that don't seem to fit logically with what information you think it's important for us to have today, we'll ask them at the end. How about that?
Sure, that sounds good.
And I'm sorry, let me jump in real quick. This is Don Earl handling the recording. For the recording's sake, if you're not speaking, can you please mute your phone if you have that ability? That will help eliminate any background noise.
Thank you. So I did invite Domenico to come today because he actually is much closer to the target model in practice than I am these days. I did start out as a colleague of Domenico's being trained as a trainer in this model, and we both wear a child trauma clinician hat for many, many years. So, Domenico, thank you so much for joining me. Hello? That was weird. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah. So, you know, the journey here for me was Stephanie called me one day or emailed me and said, hey, can we talk about Target? So that's sort of how I landed where you are. So I brought Domenico with me so he could help me out. But basically what you, just down to the bare bones, what you need to know is that Target is an educational, psychoeducational model around building skills for kids who've been through complex trauma exposure. It's a seven-step sequence, which the steps spell out freedom. We talked a little bit about it last time as you guys were selecting, but whether we typically this was designed for kids in group settings, so the JJ settings in particular, and when we brought it out and chose it for PI, our PI evaluation, this model in particular, Dr. Julian Ford, who's the designer of this model, agreed to let us use it in individual and in family settings in the community and in the home. So basically, we really want kids to be able to understand how their brain has been impacted from these complex trauma exposures, which are really about three things. This type of early trauma exposure happens, it's interpersonal in nature, so generally speaking, that means the very people who are supposed to be providing a safe, nurturing environment for a child is actually the one inflicting the trauma. Starts from a very young age, and it's chronic and ongoing. That when kids have these three pieces of trauma, it really takes them into a different trajectory of symptomatology than if it were someone who maybe had a, you know, quote-unquote normal developing childhood and got into an accident and had one single acute trauma. That recovery is much different than kids who've had complex trauma exposure. So this model in particular is designed for kids, they say 10 and up. When we used it here in Illinois for actual sustainability, we used it for 12 and up because we really did think that 10-year-olds, especially trauma-impacted 10-year-olds, have a hard time cognitively understanding some of the concepts. So that was sort of one of the things that we did, the adaptation that we made. But it really builds them an understanding in how their brain has been impacted by these scary experiences that have happened over and over again, and basically kind of gives them some understanding of the brain, the stress response system, what happens in their brain, and how it sort of creates this ongoing cascading physiological reactions that kids feel oftentimes like they only have three things that are open to them, which is fight, flight, or freeze when they're triggered in that response. So So we really want to build skills around managing all of that. And I'm going to invite Domenico, if you wouldn't mind, to kind of walk us through some of the additional steps. But I think one of the things that is good about Target is that especially it does not require a trauma narrative, which not many treatments, one or two treatments really require someone to sort of write down and process trauma. That is not what this model is about. And I've never sat across from a kid who's said to me, I just need one more therapy session a week and this will all be fine. So the reason I think this model resonates with young people, especially early adolescents, is they don't have to talk about everything that's gone wrong in their lives, or they don't have to really think about that, and it really builds their ability to say, oh, I'm not a bad kid. It may be my brain is wired differently. And the most important thing means it can be rewired and we can make new connections. So that's sort of, I guess, the general overview. But Domenico, I don't know if you want to hop in and say a few things that I kind of glossed over or a thing that you want to talk about.
Thanks, Jen. I would just emphasize that Target is teaching self-regulation skills. Rather than talking about the trauma itself, it's teaching kids how to deal with the impact of trauma in their everyday lives right now. So kids don't have to focus on what happened a long time ago. They could talk about more recently what may have triggered their alarms or like their stress responses in their everyday lives now, and to learn how to cope with that with the very concrete, practical skills, those seven steps of freedom that Jen mentioned before. So we're helping kids to learn a very basic skill, which is how to focus once again by doing something called the SOS, so they could stop themselves in the moment when they feel that they've been triggered and slow themselves down and orient to something that's important to them, and to check in with their stress and personal control levels. That's one of the skills, but ultimately they're also learning how to recognize triggers in different forms, how to identify emotions, both reactive emotions and main emotions, which are more of the kind of emotions that you would have when you're alarmed, you're not being triggered, your stress response system is not being activated. So it's kind of a balancing off of both a person's stress response system being activated, and once they're activated, learning how to bridge over to a calmer state when they're more in touch with their core values and beliefs and those resources in their lives that they feel supported by. And that's really what Target does over and over again to help kids learn those concrete skills in the here and now.
Hey, this is Jeff. Could I ask a quick question here?
Yeah, go right ahead.
One of the things when we had the purveyor call with Dr. Ford, we had talked about the age issue. And I just kind of, since you guys have done this, I kind of want to get your take on it. One of the things he said is he thought that it could probably go as low as 10. But when challenged on that, he said really what it is a lot of that is more work with the parents. Do you think there's still value even for that younger population of teaching the parents some of this and talking to them about subjective units of distress and SOS and teaching them so they could teach their kids as they develop? Or do you think it really need the kids have to be cognitively aware enough to learn it themselves?
I guess I would absolutely say you can teach these skills to a caregiver and help a child as they grow up thinking about these same things, teaching the skills, because really the person who regulates the child is a caregiver and who has that sort of in the moment. So if the caregiver, in fact, a lot of the work I do in the intensive placement stabilization program is for young kids especially, is work with a caregiver to regulate themselves so then they can regulate the child. So, and Domenico, please step up and let me know what your opinion is, but I would say absolutely.
Well, I definitely agree. Involving the caregiver is very important. That's sometimes a challenge, but if you can get the caregiver to know these basic skills and to be trauma-informed, to help the child to calm themselves down after they've been activated, that's very helpful, and it creates a safe environment for the child to start to build a lasting, durable attachment.
Okay, so it's not out of the realm of possibility for us to look at 10-year-olds in this, but it really would be more working with the parents in that 10 to 12-year range.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, and you can do it very simple, even if you just start with the first F, the focus piece, a child who learns to say, oh, my brain is going so fast, or, oh, my gosh, I'm upset, you know, kind of being able to even have the caregiver help them understand where they are on that arousal continuum. I think those are the real basic skills that we all do with our own kids and you know, don't think twice about it. But that's really the piece that I think could be very valuable.
Could you talk a little bit more about, you know, I know that in the PIE project, yep. most of what you did with Target was individual delivery. So you were going out to the homes where these kids were, and you were working with them in their home setting. So could you just help us kind of understand a little more clearly, you know, when we're talking about involvement of parents, I mean, and obviously there are clear benefits to having the parents learn these steps, but what does that look like? I mean, does it look like parents sitting down with their children and the therapist learning the steps together? Does it look like some individual work with the child without the parent present and then just getting the parent up to speed? Can you give us kind of a picture of that?
Oh, surely we can. And, you know, Domenico will hop in any time. I think it was varied quite a lot. A lot of times, the way that I suppose, generally speaking, it's intended is caregiver and child sit down together. Parents sit down with the child, depending on the cognitive age of the child, of course. And the attention span of the child, you know, kind of taking into account those developmental pieces. I mean, that was our goal, was to have the entire family unit sitting down and learning the same thing together. But we have had times where, you know, what you would expect, which is, no, it's the kid, you fix the kid with Target, and all of it will be okay. And then we've also had sort of the flip side where the kid's like, you know what, look, I'm fine. But the caregiver says, oh, but wait a minute, I want to learn more about these skills. So unfortunately, we didn't have sort of one generalized piece. But I think ideally that would be wonderful if they could all sit down as a unit, taking into account the developmental lens. So Domenico, do you want to add to that?
Well, I totally agree. I think that the complex trauma treatments I'm aware of all recommend that the parents are very involved, and also to recognize these unique stresses that some parents are facing when they're working with kids who have experienced complex trauma. So it requires they get extra support, and Target provides that support and gives them a basic framework to understand how trauma impacts kids in a way that other kids with a more typical upbringing aren't impacted. So it's very helpful for them as well.
Agreed.
So could you see this being used in a group setting at all for maybe general education and then do one-on-one with the families, or do you really think that from start to finish it needs to be one-on-one with the families?
Hmm. Domenico, do you have a thought about that right offhand?
Well, the Illinois model, we've been focused on families and kids, but I know that the developers of Target have been very successful at using Target in groups. And in fact, I think most of Connecticut runs Target through groups, so I know it can be very helpful that way as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that would be the perfect combination is, you know, sort of a group model with Target, you know, learning pieces, and then a follow-up individual session with the family where they can tailor, you know, the learning or the experience to themselves.
Right.
I guess it would depend on, you know, if people were feeling open and safe to go through something like that. We just, and like I said last time, we didn't have that great of success when we did the evidence-based pilot project for groups in foster care. What, I don't know, now, what did I say, 2006 or something we did that? So we had some struggles, but if you had, you know, already some built-in pathways in, I would say you could probably be pretty flexible, and that Julian has, Dr. Ford has been flexible with us in terms of how he said that we can use it.
Yeah, because our focus population is actually really before any serious problems occur. We're going to try to get them early on in the process. So that's why I'm wondering if a group might work, because you know the kids they're not all showing difficulties, you know, or any trauma related issues by the time we're getting to them. It's just, you know, not too long after, you know, finalization and stuff is what we're looking at.
Yeah,
it's Elizabeth. I was really hoping that if we could do it in a group classroom setting, signing up for a class sounds a lot less like I'm admitting I can't quite do this.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't fully understand your referral pathway in and things like that, so I don't know for sure how this all works, but I mean, I think you certainly could definitely do it in a group. I mean, that is, like you said, Domenico, where Dr. Ford created this group setting in JJ's. So, you know, I think it has a lot of flexibility.
Do you guys have any ideas around, for in terms of the clinicians, like education, background, clinical skills, was there a particular sort of type of therapist or, you know, characteristics of the interventionist that you felt this, you know, really could do Target well? Or like, are you noticing anything about who it is that we need to look for to be doing this?
That's a really great question. So I'm going to stutter to answer that, but I think best case scenario is someone who knows about trauma already or who has gotten enough training to understand trauma, what it looks like in kids, the developmental impact, what the symptoms might be. Even if the kids that we're seeing in your project don't have those, it's a really good place because to have them have that baseline knowledge so they can apply it as they move forward and start thinking about contextualize what might be some of the signs that I want to watch for as we work with these families. So I would say that. I also think, I think it really does take a mental health professional and a well-supported one to fully do it in a way that will meet fidelity standards of ATS. Domenico, your thoughts? I know you're working directly with therapists now, and I knew most of them as they're going through PI as well. What do you think about that?
I think in general I agree with you, Jen. However, there have been a few of our very high-performing target therapists who don't have master's degrees, and they've still done very well and became certified in Target because we do have very close fidelity monitoring. And it's a highly structured treatment with individual sessions being manualized and laid out and lots of handouts. So if you're very well organized and you can stay on track and you know how to talk to people, I think people can do pretty well in Target. But I agree with Jen. I mean, the more clinical training and experience you have, the better.
Yeah, well, so in the mental health professional being a bachelor, you know, with this proper support, and fidelity monitoring, I think, could be just fine. But it does take a lot of support because you are, Domenico, can you tell a little bit about how much you're talking with therapists now who are going through?
Well, I talk with therapists once a month for individual consultation and twice a month in group consultation with 11 therapists. But I also watch their videos of recorded sessions, which are sent to me, and I rate them on a pre-established fidelity scales, and they get direct feedback on how closely they're following the treatment. So they gradually get more and more, accurate or close to the preferred model teaching. But it does take, you know, some time to gradually develop that. So there is a lot of direct contact, either through phone or through these fidelity reports.
In terms of the numbers of families that, so, and I don't know exactly your staffing, like if you have a full-time, and I know we've asked this question before, so I hate to be like repetitive, but still trying to get clear about this. If you have a full-time target therapist, how many families are they seeing? Jen, you talked to us about, you know, needing sort of a 5 month period of time on average.
Yeah, so what we worked out in coordination with ATS, the purveyor, was a full-time target therapist can carry about 10, well, individuals or families, however you want to break it out. And the average length, so I think you would probably build in 5 months. But the other thing that we have to recognize as we think about your implementation is that yours are not going to be necessarily, as you already said, families who are stressed necessarily or families who are showing already some either instability or just, you know, sort of being overwhelmed with things. So, you know, we're trying to intervene sometimes when kids are at a very high need of mental health services. So it took us longer because life is just more chaotic for those kids. you know, maybe about 5 months was the average to get through versus where your families might not be at that level and might go, may go very close to weekly or however, you know, to complete the 10 to 12 sessions. So that, I guess that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, that's helpful. And I mean, it, just in terms of, you know, because one of the things that we're trying to think through is just logistics, right? I mean, you know, there's at the end of the day, you can run out of days too, right? So you can have a full-time therapist, but if you're trying to see 10 families and you got to get those families all scheduled, and you know, and kids are in school and families are working or whatever, at some point you just run out of days.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so I mean, and so I guess some assumptions that we can start to make out of that is that, you know, your therapists are not working a traditional 9-to-5 full-time schedule. Is that a fair statement?
I don't know. I guess it depends on how you would implement this, but I mean, I guess if you do a classroom setting, then, you know, you hit a lot of families with one shot of sort of the meeting. But if you're an individual, you are factoring in, you know, like our folks are factoring in travel times, prep time, you know, kind of things, setting up camp, set, you know, things that happen off camera oftentimes that they have to navigate. I know one of our therapists was kind of shaken up. He had to end up sort of separating daughter and foster mom right before they sat down and having a session. So all of that happens off camera, and you sit down, the camera's on, and he looks flustered because he's like, holy crap. So there's, you know, there's lots of sort of things to be aware of, but again, that may not be necessarily the acuity level that you guys are looking at. At least I would hope not. If they're
yeah, well, and I guess I'm wondering too. You know, there's been this talk about 10 to 12 if you're doing individually, right? But it's also very highly manualized. So I guess, you know, help me understand it. Really manualized and structured. Why sometimes 10? Why sometimes 12? Like, what's your marker to? How do you know you're moving to 12? And how do you know you got it with 10? I mean, is it just the how quickly you hit the steps, freedom steps, or what dictates that?
So one of the things that's been interesting, and Domenico, I'm going to totally defer this to you after I say this one thing, which is, I have seen videos of kids who are in step 9, who cannot tell you what has happened in step 1 or 2. So they've progressed necessarily, like in quotation, they've progressed through the sessions, but they can't apply anything that they were talking about or anything they supposedly learned early on. So that's typically sort of the marker. But Domenico, I'm going to have you kind of speak to what you've seen and when people have done booster or remedial sessions or whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, so the question is, why do they sometimes have 10 or 12 sessions? I think the new manual for us now, is 11 sessions. And what we have is sometimes kids will have long gaps between sessions because for different reasons. Like you said, Jen, they may not retain much. And Target recognizes that when kids are highly stressed out, they're unable to retain new information. And dealing with anything involving trauma may activate their stress response system and may actually make it difficult for them to learn new material. So we sort of build it into the Target model that you're repeating material over and over again, you're checking in with them, and you're giving them boosters if they need it, which is sessions where you're kind of repeating some of the content from last week or a few weeks ago to make sure it kind of sinks in so the kids can get comfortable with the new skills and to learn how to use them. So although there are 11 now sessions in our current manual, that could go a half year if there's gaps in between or boosters for that reason.
Right.
Yeah, that's helpful. And I guess that would be sort of the same, because I'm thinking about what I've seen about the group delivery, is I think the one range that I saw for group delivery was anywhere from 3 to 10 sessions. And I had sort of the same question, like why such a variance, and how do you know when you're using 3 and when you're using 10? So Right. Maybe some of the same, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
you know,
I think
really
we're
go ahead, Michael.
Sorry, Jen. I think we're always doing 11 sessions of content. But some of that content is repeated if kids are not retaining it.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yep.
Okay.
That is one of the things that's actually probably one of the best I've seen in the multitude of evidence-based practices we've worked with, which is you really are in the moment being able to see practical applications of the skills that you're teaching. So you can come back the next time and say, okay, let's talk about it. Somebody had a stressful event, and they can kind of, well, they can show you and tell you what they've learned and what they haven't versus sort of you've just gone through this and isn't this great, now go off and apply your skills. So it's, it is probably one of the top in regards to actual practical application, which is what I care about as, you know, as a therapist or even as an administrator now, is can people apply what they've learned?
Does it seem to matter whether the clinician has a mixture of both target families and, say, adoption pres, which is longer-term ongoing cases, or have you seen more success with the selected clinicians carrying only target cases?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that because we didn't have any other cases but target cases. I mean, they worked in the IPS program or the old SOC program in general, and then they would have a target case. But I would imagine anybody who's immersed in doing target all the time could probably be very good very quickly. So I don't really know in terms of about the more, I would say the more stable or more, I don't know for sure.
I think, probably the broader question around that point, like I'm thinking, Pat, is how do you keep the therapist who maybe has a mixed caseload, you know, services as usual comes to my mind. So how do we make sure you're just doing target with these families over here and you're not, you know, especially if you really buy into it, which, you know, we hope that somebody who's learning target really invests in it and learns to use it well. But then, of course, for our project, we have to say, don't use it with these guys over here.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
We did do that in PI. I mean, it was a very clear, you cannot provide target to anyone that's not on your caseload that's specific. So we did a lot of psychoeducation with our own staff who were doing this, with the supervisors. We talked to caseworkers. Like, we just sort of immersed everybody in the, you know, sort of rigid rules of evaluation. And we ran everybody past, like anyone that would come forward as a randomized controlled trial, we would check to see, are they seeing other therapists? Are they doing, you know, having too many cross-pollination of things? And that's the word we were looking for earlier, cross-pollination of things, just to make sure that we were keeping that very close. And in fact, ATS will also push that as well, because the contract is with DCFS. People cannot leave DCFS and take target with them. It is only here, only DCFS. So ATS doesn't privately contract out with XYZ therapists to do this once that therapist leaves. And in fact, this is kind of interesting. We've had three therapists who were trained in target who left IPS and have come back to do target as well as IPS again. So they left the program and liked it, missed it so much that they came back. So I think that's well of the model itself. But it is something I'll have to definitely balance.
And Jen, did you find that when you did that education with therapists and you talked about it all the time and you just sort of immersed them in the reason why, that they managed that okay? Like, was that, did you feel like that was still a barrier in any way, or was your managing that successful?
I think it was really fine because we had so much cross-checking on the front end.
Okay.
I've never heard of any case where people were sort of going rogue with the target.
Okay. So if we have sort of a similar plan, we can expect that we could mitigate any concern there.
Right. And I have, you know, those target therapists were employed by my program. So I had a little bit more, I was closer to them than probably, I don't know what your program will look like in terms of where these kids are coming from, the families coming from, but they were directly working in my program. So I had some administrative oversight as well.
So when we're using target, we would want to make sure that it stays clean, and we don't also want to teach them ARC and TBRI and other things. It would be strictly target, nothing else.
I think it would be a challenge. You could probably do it if it was a good clinician, but at, you know, at any point when you're trying to learn a new model, especially one that is as structured as this, you know, you got to kind of pay attention to that. But if you did do that, the fidelity monitoring would pick it up if they were not catching on, or if you saw something that was, you know, sort of indicative of a mixing of things. Watching the videos, writing the videos, and working with the fidelity monitor and coach would definitely curtail or at least flag that for you as you move through. you know, the thing, now that you mentioned ARC, and Domenico knows this, he's probably rolling his eyes at me right now, but that's my favorite model because it's a framework. I could take Target and dump it right into an ARC framework, and it would make perfect sense. So I think you are right in terms of watching for that, but I think there are safeguards. You ever thought about that, Domenico, or anything you want to add?
You know, when I first learned about Target, I wondered if there would be a mixing of other models in there. I haven't seen any of that happening, even with skilled clinicians. They seem to be able to separate out Target from whatever else they've learned before. And it's not as if you have to empty your mind to do Target, but you definitely have to be careful of the words you use and the ways you use them. And because there's such close monitoring, it just hasn't been a problem so far.
Yeah.
That fidelity monitoring is a key piece. I mean, I hear you keep mentioning that multiple times.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is probably, it's very detailed and precise, really, I think, because, you know, you want to make sure people are, and then the other thing about that is even when people, even when your therapist reaches a certification level of being certified in Target, you still go through fidelity monitoring once a year. I mean, throughout the year to make sure there's no model drift either.
And from your perspective, I mean, that's been worth it. I mean, it does what it's intended to do. Is that accurate?
Manico, I'm going to toss that to you.
You know, I think that's one of the great strengths of Target. I don't know of any other model that gives this kind of oversight to the therapist. They're getting direct feedback from us on a regular basis. They get lots of support. Because of the structure of the sessions, there's no confusion about what you should be doing. It's very clear what you should do. As long as you stay organized and focused, you can get to this material in an orderly way. So, you know, I think that's a wonderful part of Target that I haven't seen elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that there was a question that was a bit more broad around, you know, just other barriers that you've seen in the PI implementation and that you've overcome. I know, Jen, that you shared with us lessons learned. I mean, I guess this is just sort of another opportunity that we want to take to just, you know, your biggest cautions for us, other than those that you've already shared. Were there other implementation barriers that you've either figured out and can give us some guidance around, or have there been barriers that you haven't figured out?
Mm-hmm. Huh. The barriers that I think we're wrestling now is just sustainability, like how do you keep a trained and supported workforce? I think one implementation-wise, it took people a long time and we really interviewed hard around this the second time we interviewed, about people being willing to have yourself videotaped. It's very, very nerve-wracking. It's, you know, people are, well, I haven't done this since grad school 20 years ago. What do you mean? So there, I don't want to undersell the fact that people were very anxious, but I think, and what we did see is after time went on a little bit, it was almost like they just kind of forgot the camera was there. So that is, I would say, interview for that at least, or make sure that folks know that that's a component, and that's a non-negotiable. People can still do Target if they don't want to be videotaped, but the therapist can't use it as part of their proficiency and certification. So I would say that would be one thing. And Domenico, hop in if you have any barriers or lesson learned that you think as we're going through too. Logistically, making sure people have the cameras, the setup, the stands, like all of the sort of clunky pieces that can kind of get in the way. One of the things that we did not have to do was get a separate writer for consent. We thought for DCFS boards we'd have to get a separate one for video, but we didn't, which obviously won't be an issue for you guys.
What about on the note of the equipment? I mean, is it complicated kind of video equipment? Or are we talking about equipment that's relatively simple?
Simple. Yeah, it's simple. I mean, once the sort of mechanics of it are down. So, you know, are you recording in high definition or are you just recording a regular session? Can you get it uploaded? We have some people, unfortunately, like me most of the time, is not exactly technologically savvy. So there's a lot of like hand-holding and mistakes at the beginning. And probably some frustration as well, in making sure that the website is up and working and that you know, I think early on, and, you know, Domenico, you and I both know this, we would go to download a video from a site and then leave for the evening because it's going to be an eight-hour download for an hour tape. So we had to kind of really negotiate around that, but I think ATS at the end, I don't know that we had any problems with that. But that was one of the sustainability things too, is we had to migrate our own website and figure out how can we host this outside of ATS, and so all of those things. But lessons learned for you, Domenico, even just.
I think you're right about the camera, the downloads, all that's much better now. If you could film your kid's birthday party, you could film your own session. So that part's not complicated. I guess the only challenge with Target is probably the same challenge we see with other treatment models, and that's just getting the caregivers to be involved and engaged and actually go through the majority of the sessions. That's still a challenge for Target, even though there's so many benefits.
Right.
But I don't think that's unique to Target.
Right. I'm sure at some point, too, with regard to the videotaping and the equipment, we'll be asking you, like, you know, what equipment did you purchase? Where did you get it from? How much was it? I mean, I'm sure we'll be wanting to get those details.
Actually have it for you guys. It's in the implementation plan that I think I sent you for when we were sustaining Target within the IPS program. Part of the implementation guide has a section in there about what we wanted people to buy.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll reference that then. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Perfect.
Well, we would love to take credit for that. Wasn't my work. It was Amber Stone who ran the Target stuff before me. It was as sharp as a tack. So. I'm really trying to think if there's anything else programmatically or structural-wise that you might need to know.
Yeah, well, and certainly if it's, you know, nothing that comes to mind during our time together, I mean, we would love it if you would just, you know,
sure.
When you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you think of something, like, just jot it down for us.
Will do.
That would be fantastic because I'm sure we're going to be asking you.
Right.
Did you have any... assessment tools, pre-post tests, parent surveys, anything like that that you utilized in doing this?
Yes. So we, for the evaluation itself, you know, it carried its own cadre of evaluations, but we used, for performance indicators, we used the CANS, Child, Adolescent Needs and Strengths document. We also used the Abbreviated Dysregulation Index, both of which tools have carried over into sustainability phases within this program. We used target satisfaction surveys for parent, caregiver, and kid, I think, right? Youth, I think we did. Those three pieces that we used, and those were sort of the satisfaction surveys are about the only thing we had to really have a good indicator if kids were enjoying this because, you know, the data is hidden from us for evaluation purposes. So, we really sort of hung on to those pieces to know how it was going, and then generally speaking, what was the completion rate. And I think I said before that it was pretty high. Once kids actually went through everything and decided, yeah, I want to do this, I think it had like a 66% a completion rate, which is pretty high for an evidence-based practice, which, you know, we were happy to see. But again, I think you get into early adolescence, older adolescence, you get busier kids. So sometimes the kids are like, yeah, you know, this is great and all, but I'm not doing this anymore. There's just more to work around when you have older kids. So, I don't know. I think that was, I guess that's probably the biggest pieces I have. Other than also it takes, the only thing I would other note is that it takes a special skill set to be able to give people feedback on videos and performance in a way that they can hear it and feel safe and can kind of integrate what you're saying. So you really got to make sure that there's a good match between the coach slash fidelity monitor and the individual, and that those skill sets kind of miss. So we had a couple of times where we've had to kind of, you know, sometimes there's hurt feelings, or, you know, we really kind of have to honor that stuff and pay attention to it, because it can demoralize you pretty quickly. So there are some markers like that I would pay attention as well.
Yeah.
Domenico has a great skill set on that, by the way.
Thank you.
I guess, too, for clarity on that piece, I mean, initially, the fidelity monitoring that you'd got at time was from ATS, is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that if we're going to build in fidelity monitoring, that was more what you did as part of sustainability?
Right. So we...
Okay.
Yeah, we had a couple of different fidelity monitors that worked with us through our course of our time with ATS. Yeah, so we built internal capacity here in Illinois so that we can continue to pay or to provide Target without, you know, the kind of money that PI came with.
Right.
So, yeah, cost is always an issue in sustainability for sure.
Okay. Rachel, anything else that I missed from the list, or any other questions that folks have right now?
No, I think for the list, we've got everything covered. Just if anybody else had anything that they felt like they wanted answered now.
And just while folks are kind of getting their last thoughts together, Jen, just to really, again, appreciate, and Domenico, for you joining us today. It's like, you know, I know that some of the questions that I've asked, you know, I've asked more than once. So I appreciate your patience with that, because, you know, it's like digesting this bit by bit. It's been in some ways a lot to get your head around. So I appreciate your patience with us, because I know sometimes you must be thinking, like, I know I answered this before. But,
yeah,
you know,
right.
The timing of when it sticks. So I just really appreciate you hanging in there with us.
Yeah,